You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to this podcast on Alzheimer's disease hosted by Med Learning Group. This podcast is one in a series of five aimed to educate clinicians and caregivers about a variety of treatment aspects of Alzheimer's disease and other types of dementia. In this podcast, we'll be discussing several aspects of caregiver support with Catherine Brandt. My name is Chris, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. So I'd like to welcome Katie to our discussion. Katie is Director of Caregiver Support Service and Public Relations for the Frontotemporal Disorders Unit at Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School. Through this supporting role, she supports families at every stage of life living with dementia. Katie is a well-known dementia care expert and educator in the healthcare and research space. Katie, I appreciate you joining us today to talk about Alzheimer's disease and related dementia.
Oh, thank you, Chris. I'm so happy to be here.
So let's start with you. I gave you only a brief introduction to start. Explain who you are and what your role is in managing patients with Alzheimer's disease and other types of dementia.
Yes, so you're right. I am the Director of Caregiver Support Services and Public Relations in the Mass General Hospital Frontal Temporal Disorders Unit. Our team cares for people living with young onset and atypical forms of dementia. So our patients living with Alzheimer's disease tend to be those living with young onset Alzheimer's disease. We have patients with frontal temporal degeneration, which is a related dementia, including behavioral variant FTD and primary progressive aphasia. So my role is to work with families really from diagnosis to death. And I wish that it was diagnosis to cure. We're working to get closer to that every day. Our director, Dr. Brad Dickerson, always says we're working to provide the highest quality of care while tirelessly researching for a cure. So my goal is to connect with families, talk with them about their life today and how this new diagnosis is causing changes, to encourage them to make plans, meet with an elder law attorney, connect with a support group, think about how they can start to set a foundation for care in their lives that is going to follow the trajectory of a disease. And then I coordinate all of our education and community events. So when we have webinars, a newsletter, education day, I'm honored to be a fundraiser for the unit and I'm now planning the 9th Black Tie Gala to benefit our clinical research program. And I'm an advocate. I just came back from a trip to Washington, D.C. for the National Alzheimer's Impact Movement Advocacy Forum to talk about pro-social policy for families impacted by Alzheimer's and related dementia.
Wow. So you clearly have an important role in managing these patients. Now, you've spoken at length on these topics at hospitals, conferences, colleges, and a variety of other educational events. What is your general approach to educating people, whether clinicians, patients, students, whomever? What are some of the things that people absolutely need to know about dementia and its effects on patients and their families?
Yeah, so a message that is really important when I'm talking to students and clinicians, you know, healthcare providers, especially when you think of that neurologist, or even if you receive that diagnosis from a primary care physician, those clinicians need to remember that when they give a diagnosis of Alzheimer's or related dementia, they are actually going to see two diagnoses, one of patient and one of caregiver. And suddenly, they really do have two patients sitting in front of them. And so it's important for clinicians to know that this is a disease that requires them to not only work with the person living with the diagnosis, but to work with whoever the primary caregiver is. And this could be a spouse, an adult child, a close friend, or even in some cases, a paid caregiver. So I think that can be a mind shift for clinicians. And it just has to, you know, change their approach to be very inclusive and have sometimes even group conversations with families.
We'll get a little bit more into the caregivers and family members and friends that kind of help care for patients with Alzheimer's disease and dementia in a little bit. One of the other things with these types of diseases, there's often a lot of clinicians and other caregivers involved. Describe this team-based care for Alzheimer's disease, and how does it work in your institution?
Yeah, so we're really proud to be an interdisciplinary team Dr. Brad Dickerson is a neurologist, a neuroscientist. We have neuropsychologists, neuropsychiatry. We have speech and language pathologists. And then we work in collaboration with people outside of our department, which would include social workers, physical therapists, and occupational therapists. We work very closely with palliative care and primary care physicians. It is critically important that we have connections with the healthcare providers at the facilities where our patients spend time, whether that's an adult day health program or a skilled nursing facility or a hospice program. The reason why this is so important is because there's not one pill, there's not one approach to care for a person with Alzheimer's or related dementia. And in fact, when people come to us and they receive that diagnosis, whether it's of young onset Alzheimer's disease or behavioral variant FTD, they're also coming to us with their whole history, their whole medical history. So if you had diabetes or a cancer diagnosis, or maybe you dealt with lifelong depression before your diagnosis of dementia, that needs to be incorporated as well moving forward. And thinking about how are the symptoms of this new diagnosis affecting other parts of your life. And really employing the expertise of this multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary team can help families live the highest quality of life possible while navigating the symptoms that the diagnosis presents.
So there's definitely a lot of balls in the air in terms of clinicians involved, as well as individual patient factors and family and things that are happening. And so thank you for all you do to coordinate all this. You have a very important position. Now, in dementia and frontotemporal disorders, there's a lot of different aspects of care at play. There's managing day-to-day activities, prevention of further cognitive decline, handling family members, end-of-life planning and care, a lot of the things that you've alluded to. At each step, making decisions together with patients and their caregivers is and should always be a priority. So just talk a little bit about that. What is shared decision making? Why is it so important for patients with Alzheimer's disease and dementia?
Shared decision making is at the heart of person-centered care planning. And I think it really gives the opportunity for the clinician to connect with the patient and their family members or, you know, primary caregiver around their values and their goals of care. So, for example, I have a couple I've been working with lately in the mild stage of primary progressive aphasia, which is a frontal temporal disorder, a type of dementia. And their family was trying to decide when to schedule their daughter's upcoming wedding based on disease progression. And would the person with the diagnosis be able to travel for that wedding? How might they feel in an environment that could be very overstimulating? What plans could they make? And they brought this decision to their neurologist to ask questions about symptoms, disease progression, that really impacted very personal decisions for their family. And when I asked them, you know, how did you feel about talking with your physician about this? They said it made them feel so connected and that they felt that their physician really valued them as individuals and as a family, not just as like another person on their schedule that day, another appointment to get through. So I think, you know, in the absence of curative treatments, what clinicians can offer families is their time and attention, that compassionate listening to provide guidance for these very complex decisions sometimes about where to live and who's going to be the primary caregiver and, you know, even things that impact financial planning.
So kind of along those lines, and something that you mentioned earlier, just the burden on caregivers, I wanted to tease that out a little bit. A lot of times it's family members or friends who really have to sacrifice to help take care of these patients. How do you approach these conversations? I know you mentioned that when you're dealing with a patient who has dementia or Alzheimer's disease or mild cognitive impairment, you're talking to two patients, really. It's the person with the disorder and then a caregiver. How do you approach these conversations knowing that they're going to be involved on a day-to-day basis?
It can be very sensitive, because what I've really learned over time is that if you've met one person with a diagnosis of Alzheimer's or FTD, you've met one person, right? That's that one unique case. So sometimes when I'm working with a patient and caregiver, the patient can be really engaged and has an awareness of their challenges and can participate in a realistic way about future planning. But other times there's that anosognosia, right, where they have a complete lack of awareness that their symptoms are impacting functioning, activities of daily living, their ability to work. So then it's more, you know, needing to have maybe a one-on-one conversation with caregivers. But talking with caregivers very directly about the idea that caregiving can be a threat to your health. It can be a threat to your emotional, physical, and financial well-being. And we need to take this very seriously, because oftentimes caregivers give so much of themselves. Caregivers are less likely to have their annual physical appointments. If you're women are more likely to be caregivers, they might pass by that routine mammogram. And it's because they are so overwhelmed, burdened by care. And so this becomes a really significant conversation about building a deep bench, building a care team, connecting with community resources, because truly the primary caregiver is the barometer that decides what is the quality of care that the person with the diagnosis will have. And so what clinicians really need to focus on is, how well is that caregiver doing? How well are they managing? Are they getting mental health support for the stress that comes along with having a diagnosis in the family? Because that can help to dictate how well their patient will do.
Yeah, and I don't think the caregiver role can be understated at all, particularly with our elderly population getting older and older and larger because of the baby boom generation. The caregiver aspect is going to increasingly gain importance in over the next 5, 10, 15 years. So I think clinicians really have to focus on that. Now, kind of along those lines, what about long-term planning? What exactly is long-term planning for these patients, and how do you approach these difficult conversations as well?
It is difficult, because I have had families that I've worked with where they receive a diagnosis and maybe the course of the illness is a few years, 2 or 3 years. And then I've worked with other families where they've cared for their loved one for 15 years. So for each family, it may look different. But this is why it's critically important for families in the early stage to really focus on two things. The first is receiving an accurate diagnosis from an expert clinician. So if your loved one is experiencing cognitive changes and you go see your primary care physician and they say, well, it looks like dementia, you want to see an expert to help you understand, well, what's causing the dementia? Is it Alzheimer's disease? Is it frontal temporal dementia? Because that might give you a window into the type of symptoms that you will need to provide care for, maybe the duration of the disease. And then using that information to have a very honest conversation with your attorney. And that attorney should not be the attorney who helped you with your real estate transaction or maybe helped you plan for your child's, you know, college, but it should be an attorney who is a certified elder law attorney. And you can find one by connecting with the National Academy for Elder Law Attorneys. But really talking with families early about trying to have open and honest conversations about what are your values? What do you think you would want for care in the later stages? Because you need to have those conversations early when people are living with cognitive impairment, because they may not be able to participate in those conversations in the same way later. From my perspective, one of the things that's very important that I say to families is just because a diagnosis has come into your life does not mean that joy has to go out. Personhood, dignity, love, and connection are available to you at every stage. And it is important for clinicians to share that with families because we all need that hope, right? It's hard. In the absence of being able to offer a treatment, and I know that there are new treatments today, but the reality is it's not widespread. It's not easily accessible yet. So telling families that this might not have been a path that you chose, but there is a whole community, an army of families waiting for you to support you and provide guidance and care and to really share that other people have walked this path. You're not alone. So every physician who provides a diagnosis of Alzheimer's or related dementia must write a prescription to send them to the Alzheimer's Association, the Association for Frontal Temporal Degeneration, the Lewy Body Association. They must connect them with their community so that families know that they're not alone. We don't have a cure for dementia, but we do have a cure for isolation and loneliness today.
Well, thank you very much, Katie. This has been an excellent discussion on some of the challenges that patients and their caregivers, whether they're wives, husbands, kids, friends, face when managing Alzheimer's disease and other types of dementia. But that's it for now. Once again, thank you, Katie, for joining us. And thanks to all of our listeners for joining as well. As a reminder, MedLearning Group offers many types of CME programs across a variety of disease states, including several neurology topics like this one. We also have other podcasts in this series involving speakers from neurology, primary care, and the Alzheimer's Association, if you're interested. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. The CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Lily, who provided an educational grant for this activity. Thank you very much and have a great day.